America, really big news. This is so important because after all these years, I can tell you, I mean, when I remember starting this, oh my gosh, 2016 on Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who had been appointed to by the president to be his national security advisor, and everything that happened to this great American hero, this true patriot, is now culminating in such an amazing and miraculous change because of Sidney Powell. I'm going to give the credit to Sidney Powell. We were writing stories trying to expose it, but there is nobody that has been fighting harder for Michael Flynn and his family than his attorney, Sidney Powell. She's incredible, and she has really held the government accountable for turning over exculpatory evidence, Brady evidence, that she said they were withholding from the defense. Remember, because she came in. She was a second defense counsel. It was, you know, Covington and Burling were the first. They failed miserably, even got Michael Flynn, Lieutenant General Flynn, to admit guilt when he didn't even do anything wrong. Because, look, they were strangleholding his family. He had no money left. They had to sell his house. I mean, and they were threatening his son. They were threatening his son, who had just had a baby. They were going to drag him into this whole Russia hoax mess. And this was the former special counsel Robert Mueller's team with Andrew Weissman and Jeannie Rhee and all of these folks that were big, by the way, Clinton supporters who were then on the special counsel and couldn't even find one iota of evidence against President Donald Trump or Michael Flynn. But because they got Flynn to admit to lying to the FBI, even when the FBI agents who interviewed him on January 24th at the White House didn't even believe he was lying, they just felt that they had got something right in their belt. But Sidney Powell came in and she fought for him. And now it looks like we are so close now to an exoneration, not even a pardon. I mean, I think he's going to be fully exonerated. There's a good chance that the court could throw all of this out. And if Judge Emmett Sullivan doesn't, then I believe the president will pardon him fully. I believe that. I don't know that. I have no insider knowledge of that. But based on the evidence and based on what we've seen, you got to go to sarahacarter.com. Go to sarahacarter.com if you haven't read the stories. These are the documents that were just recently unsealed. And the only reason why Sidney Powell got all these documents, not only that she fought for them, but was because of Attorney General William Barr, who put Jensen, a U.S. Attorney Jensen, as well as Timothy Shea, on the case to basically oversee the Flynn case. And they discovered all of these new documents. We have them there on sarahacarter.com in the stories. Please read them. And that brings me to what we are doing today, which is so important because we're adding a little bit at a time. We've had Roger Stone on the Sarah Carter Show, talk to him extensively, putting my prayers out there for him because tomorrow is the day he's supposed to be turning himself into prison. And we've seen now that he has appealed. He has appealed his case. He has a phenomenal attorney, David Schoen, who is a good friend of mine. And David is probably one of the best out there too. Defense attorneys. Let's keep our fingers crossed that the whole truth comes out on Roger Stone. We've had him on the show. We have had Sidney Powell on the show. We have had Carter Page on this show. Remember Carter Page. Don't forget about Carter Page. He's just as important as all of these players, right? Because the FBI took a false FISA warrant out on him. They falsified the FISA with the surveillance court so that they could spy on him, so they could spy on the Trump campaign. But today we have one of the most central players to this entire saga, and that is George Papadopoulos and his wife, Simona Papadopoulos. She and George have been through hell, and they have risen above it, and they are doing fantastic now. But boy, do they have a lot to say. There is information in this interview that you will never hear or see anyplace else. Well, not until the interview comes out. And it's important and it's imperative. I'll give you guys a hint. He talked to Durham. That's pretty important. And I want you to think about this. If you want to know more about what's happened. Go to the Sarah Carter Show. Look at our past episodes. But also, get George Papadopoulos's book. He didn't ask me to do this. I am doing this of my own free will. In fact, during the entire interview with him, which we pre-recorded, I'm just letting you know up front, which we pre-recorded straight through, during the interview, he never even mentioned it. And I want to mention it because it's a phenomenal, phenomenal book. Deep State Target by George Papadopoulos. You can get that out there. Deep State Target. You will see so much information in there, especially if you want to know about the other characters, the people that were involved, the spies for the FBI, and for what I believe was the involvement of the U.S. intelligence community. I'm talking about Stefan Halper, the Cambridge professor. I'm talking about Joseph Mifsud, who was a central player at Linked University in Italy and was connected to George, and how that all happened. And you're going to hear about that on this interview. But get his book. And please follow me at Sarah Carter DC, again on Twitter at Sarah Carter DC. And without further ado, I am going to bring George Papadopoulos, former Trump campaign advisor and author of Deep State Target, and Simona Papadopoulos, his wife, who is a former legal advisor to the presidency office of the European Parliament. She is an actress and a fashion designer now in Los Angeles. And she has been the staunchest defender of her husband since the beginning of this mess years ago and stood by him through everything. Hi, Simona. Hi, George. Thank you so much for joining me from California. It looks like the weather there is very beautiful, and but I guess it doesn't make up for all that you have been through. So thank you so much for being here. It's important that we get the truth out, and that's why I've not only been speaking with you, I've been actually talking to Roger Stone, talking to Sidney Powell, the attorney for General Flynn. You were all wrapped up into probably one of the biggest political scandals in modern history. And I want to start off at the top with you, George. If you could explain to me, and then Simona, the same question for you, what this has done to you, to your family, and where you are right now.
Well, it's always great to talk to you, Sarah, and thanks so much for having both of us on your show. And I heard it's you're doing great, so very happy to be on your show. Look, this is something that no human could possibly ever prepare for. You don't ever wake up one day and say, in a couple of years from now, after advising two presidential campaigns the way that I did and had worked in Washington for 5 years at probably with some of the highest level people you could imagine, including people like Douglas Feith and Seth Cropsey, Scooter Libby, where I was at the Hudson Institute, building my career up and then venturing off into the oil and gas industry to then find myself in these incredibly bizarre situations with diplomats or people masquerading as diplomats, honeypots, spies, confidential informants, all the while I'm simply trying to do my job as an advisor to the Donald Trump campaign. And, you know, there's been a lot of misunderstanding of what those responsibilities entailed. And my responsibilities were two things. One, to help write or help articulate the foreign policy speeches that the candidate was giving. And the second is to meet with foreign governments on behalf of the campaign, and also to help maybe broker a meeting between the candidate and a foreign government leader. I failed to do it with Putin, which caught me in this crazy situation, which we'll discuss. But I later succeeded with President Sisi of Egypt, where I had real connections. So that was what my responsibilities were all about. I had absolutely no connections to Russia whatsoever. So the moment I found myself in a Russia conspiracy, I understood, and so did Simona, that I had been set up, and it was just a matter of time until the truth came out.
This is really interesting, Simona, because I want to give you an opportunity to express what you've been through, because you really have been dragged into something that I'm certain you never suspected you would be dragged into in your life. You had been involved in politics in the past in Europe. You understood political machinations, the games that are played in politics. But this is something so far greater, and it affected every part of your family's life. And you personally, you've been slandered in the public by media that refuses to retract stories, by people that don't even know you. So you've been through quite a lot, just like George.
Thank you, Sarah, for having us. First of all, it's a pleasure to be on your show. You summarized us perfectly what I've been through. It has been a character assassination, and that's been deeply undermining. I cried many tears seeing at the time my husband, a reputation, somebody you love, being degraded by the media, and myself being mischaracterized as somebody I'm not remotely. I cannot remotely relate to. I'm an Italian attorney working for the EU. I had experience of the work in political world, but I never have seen such a violence in spreading fake news to feed a narrative and attack everyone who has a relation to Trump. Basically, I married a former advisor of the Trump campaign, and immediately they had to taint my persona with any sort of possible shadow. So I had many publications out there in which they say I'm misleaded about my background, that I never worked, for example, for a law firm, or that I'm a Russian agent. And later on came out even a testimony of the partner of the law firms I've been working with, public records of my inscription to the bar, my long work history at the European Parliament, 7 years, it's not 1 month. So it was really an orchestrated attempt to undermine my credibility that resulted in a deep psychological pain for both me and my family, who see on the internet somebody that they can't even recognize. If somebody Google my name today, they will think I'm the most shady person in the universe, while I am a very simple, genuine woman who fell in love with the right guy in the wrong moment.
Right. I know, I was going to tell people, because the first time that I met you, Simona, and you were at Fox News, yeah. And I said, well, let's go out to lunch. You know, let's sit down and talk. I wanted to get to know you. I had to drive. I drove into Maryland, and she was staying at a small motel in the middle of Maryland. This is not you. I'm going to tell you guys all the lies about Simona. I immediately just washed away after I sat down and had lunch with her. And I didn't believe them to begin with, because I was very well aware of what was happening at the time to President Trump. But sitting down and talking with her, picking her up at the small motel, she was doing her best to defend her husband and, you know, try to set the record straight in Washington. She was distressed. She was crying at lunch over, you know, what was happening to them, because I think it's almost being like punched in the gut. It's like you don't even understand what's coming at you, especially when you're innocent, when there's nothing there, when there is no, as Hillary Clinton would say, they're there, right? And that's what I wanted to talk to you about, George, because you did say, I mean, you're a smart man. You wouldn't have gotten to where you have gotten in your life without being smart. So you started to pick up on cues from people that were around you. Let's talk a little bit about, so people understand the timeline and how you met certain people. Why did you go to London? We know about Stefan Halper. We know about other players. And then we'll go into the new discoveries, the transcripts that everybody has been waiting to see that actually proved you right, that you had never been lying ever about what you told informants. But I want to start from the beginning so that people get what happened to you, because many people have forgotten this.
Absolutely. So we'll just do a quick summary for the chronology, because like you said, it's absolutely so important. And it's actually paramount to the new investigations, because without knowing the dates of when certain things happened, we'll never quite understand how far back this illicit investigation and spying operation actually went. From 2011 to 2015, to the summer of 2015, I worked at the Hudson Institute. Then I reached out to Corey Lewandowski in the summer of 2015. And I said, look, I think you have a winner here. I'd like to join your campaign. Here are my credentials, XYZ. We kept in contact. I left Hudson Institute. I go to London in the fall of 2015, where I'm in a group called Energy Stream. It's an energy consultancy group where I'm basically putting together these various commercial energy conferences and speaking arrangements. And I'm advising U.S. companies. I do that for a couple months, and then I'm in touch with Corey, trying to get on the Trump campaign. And I end up joining Carson's campaign first for 2 or 3 months until he dropped out. And I then leave that campaign, go back to London, where this mysterious organization that actually has really never been probed, but I think it's a very important group because that's actually the start of how this entire thing started. It was called the London Center for International Law Practice.
Right.
I've heard various things about this organization, including that it's an MI6 front. It's a front for Western intelligence services. And I can't confirm that one way or another. All I can say is the moment I joined this organization, which Simone ended up working for later on, I'm thrust into meetings there with diplomats from Australia, the UK, people, the Financial Times, et cetera, the State Department. This was like a very well-known hidden place almost in the center of London. I never understood exactly what my role was there. And upon telling this group about a month after I joined them, I'm leaving and joining the Trump campaign, that's when their smiles turned into frowns. And it looked as if they were ready to set me up. And
explain that a little, because you're telling them you're going to leave and go. And I hear a little bounce back. I hope that doesn't bother anyone out there. I think we're going to get it fixed. But you're telling them you're going to leave, join the Trump campaign, and all of a sudden their attitudes change. And I want everybody to remember, this London Institute, this academy, was connected directly to Joseph Mifsud.
Exactly.
As well. And he is the mysterious player in all of this, which is believed to still be alive. But there's been rumors about his death coming out of Italy, that he's disappeared, then he reappears. So this is one of the pivotal characters in this entire saga, coming right out of this little hidden away institute in London. Okay, go ahead.
Exactly. And this little obscure, well, seemingly obscure institute in the center of London decides, with another director who worked there, a woman named Arvinder Sambe, who at the time I had absolutely no idea who this woman was, except I just thought she was a lawyer who was a director there. I later found out that she actually worked with Bob Mueller after 9/11. She was a high-level prosecutor in the UK with direct ties to the FBI. And she and this organization tell me, well, you know, if you're going to leave us, why don't you go to Rome with us for a trip? And we have some people there who can help you on the campaign. I go to Link Campus, which David Ignatius from The Washington Post has written that this is some sort of CIA training school in the center of Rome. And I'm thrust into a conference with officials from Libya, Italian intelligence officials, and the former Italian foreign minister decides that he's going to chaperone me to meet none other than Joseph Mifsud. So the reason I'm bringing the context into how I met Mifsud is because the story was so convoluted and mixed up that they thought that Mifsud was some sort of Russian agent that I ran into by accident in London, and we all of a sudden started talking about Hillary Clinton. There's nothing further from the truth. My meeting with him was planned from the beginning. Who planned it? That's still something I think Durham is looking into.
So important. I want every one of you out there to understand what George just said. This is a pivotal, pivotal moment, not only in the whole entire Russia hoax, but what actually happened to George Papadopoulos. And this was what you were charged with, because I want people to think about this. You became a felon because they basically said that you didn't tell the truth about Mifsud, when it was Mifsud who was basically the person that it appears, they being the FBI and others in the intelligence community, set George up with. They basically activated, I like to use that word because it makes it very, you know, official CIA speak, right? They activated Mifsud. And when George went to meet him at the request of others, that's when his life started to change. But I want you to think about this. They made you a felon in the end, and you had to spend a short period of time in prison, but in prison because of Mifsud, who we believe was actually activated by the FBI or the intelligence community to gather information on George.
Sarah, also the reason why I testify to the Congress and to the Senate is because I presently worked for Joseph Mifsud at the London Center of International Law Practice, and I knew Mifsud years ago because of his involvement with the socialist group in the European Parliament. He was attending many events at the European Parliament where I was working as a legal advisor to the presidency office. So I knew that his connection were to the Western intelligence. I knew he's a supporter of the Clintons. I know he's a member of the Clinton Foundation and even campaigned for Hillary Clinton back in 2016 together with the former head of the Socialist Group at European Union. So I testified under oath to all this information, and I'm still looking forward the transcript of my testimony to finally be released for the world to know that they had access to information that were relevant enough to exonerate George, or at least to make the accuracy about the timing of the meeting with someone who has not been proved to be a Russian agent by any means, something relevant in a criminal context.
That's incredible.
Absolutely.
And the transcripts have not been made available to the public either. And this is part of those transcripts that everybody is fighting for. We want the release of the transcripts, all of the transcripts, so that people can see the truth here. George, when you met Mifsud, tell me about that. Tell me about what that situation was like, how that meeting went. Just recap that for everyone who's listening.
Every single operative that met with me in London or in Washington, D.C., or even in Athens, if we have time, we could get into some of that other bizarre stuff, knew everything about who I was, my background, and even things that I wouldn't expect them to know because most of it was private, including Joseph Mifsud. And, I kind of detail this a bit in my book, and I've spoken about it a bit, but he was probing me not only on what I was going to possibly do on the Trump campaign, because let's remember we were talking about dates. I'm meeting Joseph Mifsud at the behest of the former Italian foreign minister, even before the Washington Post announced I was an advisor on the Trump campaign. Think about that. Who told these people about me when my name wasn't even public on March 21st, 2016, when the Washington Post wrote that article about the five advisors on the campaign?
So, right.
So this is, I've always said that there was an eye on me. It's not clear what that eye was. There are rumors, and the FBI and Mueller made it clear that it had to do with some of my consulting work in Israel, that were keeping these operatives around me and what they were really scrutinizing me for. But he wanted to know what the Trump campaign was up to, what my sympathies were, and what my background really was all about, and if I was going to do what he wanted me to do, and that was introduce Trump to Putin, which, of course, within about 3 weeks, I realized that Mifsud was a real nobody, a complete a bozo, actually, who couldn't introduce me to anybody of substance. And by the time I began to shun him and just kind of get rid of him, he said, let's meet one more time. And he drops this explosive information in my lap about emails, which was already circulated around the world at that time. So it was clear that this person's entire objective, or whoever his handlers were to put me into fake situations like he did with the niece of Putin, this fake girl, and then drop this information in my lap on April 26, 2016. Now, this is also another very important piece because we can't forget that Durham is looking into foreign governments' activities and the CIA's involvement potentially in what happened here. Think about this. On April 26, 2016, Mifsud tells me about emails. But do you know who wanted to meet with me 11 days before that information? The Australian government. Why would the Australian government? Donald Trump never mentioned the word Australia. I've never been to Australia. I have nothing to do with Australia. And Australia, as far as I was concerned, was irrelevant to the campaign. But one of their embassy officials decided that they wanted to meet with me on April 15th and then arrange a meeting later on May 10th with Alexander Downer. So keep that in the back of your mind because dates are very important here.
Oh, I think dates are extremely important. And dates laid out in a timeline actually reveal the real story. This was the same thing that happened with Svetlana Lakova, who's in London, who they, you know, attempted to defame her, treat her as if she was some sort of Russian GRU spy who was having an affair with Michael Flynn. All of that was disproven. It was trashed. But really, she was able to prove a lot of that by the dates and the timelines. Do you think, George, that the FBI, under separate pretext, not dealing with the Trump campaign, but under separate pretext on you, had a FISA warrant and you became an important target because they already were spying on you? They already understood the complexity, maybe, that you had reached out to Corey Lewandowski. Do you believe that there was a FISA on you, a FISA warrant, listening in on your calls?
I'll tell you what the New York Times and ABC News told me in April of 2017, within 48 hours of one another. I received two messages out of the blue from two senior investigative reporters at ABC in New York and the New York Times in Washington, D.C. And they said it's very urgent that we should meet. Now, the dates in which they sent those messages to me were around the time when Ali Watkins from the New York Times received the I don't know if it's declassified or I guess a declassified Carter Page warrants, and they both told me in April 2017, did you know that there is or was a FISA warrant on you, and we don't understand exactly why. So they told me this in April of 2017, and both of their mouths basically dropped. And the entire time that they told me this, I wasn't shocked. The only thing I was shocked about is it had anything to do with Russia, because I've never traveled to Russia. I've never met a Russian official in my life. So, of course, it couldn't have to do with Russia unless there was some serious fraud committed upon the court. All of my ties were in the Middle East and Europe and the Mediterranean. Those are all U.S. allies. So how could I possibly be working as an agent of some U.S. ally? I don't know. So we'll see what happens. That's why I've been actually very adamant and very strong based on hoping that the last two FISA warrants are declassified, because it seems to be that those last two were the ones that were the most illegal and are subject to the most scrutiny. Clearly, there's a lot of redacted information in the Carter Page FISA warrants. I think like dozens of pages are still redacted. We need to see those pages get unredacted, declassified, and sooner rather than later, before the Democrats and the liberal media politicizes this even more so than it is right now.
I absolutely agree with you. And I want everyone to remember that that last FISA renewal on Carter Page was actually signed by Rod Rosenstein.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting, isn't it? Because it was Rod Rosenstein that gave the authority to Robert Mueller to open up the special counsel. And remember, when you sign those FISA warrants, you're basically signing that all of the information in those renewals in the original FISA warrant is accurate. It's been vetted before you turn it over to the FISA court. And we know now that that was not the case. We also know now that this wasn't their first rodeo, that spying on President Trump was not the first time, based on the Horowitz investigation of the random sampling of FISA warrants that actually shows that the FBI made enormous mistakes, if you want to call those mistakes, on other FISA warrants. So this is very, very important that we understand this, that this was not, and I've always said this from the very beginning of this investigation, you would not do this type of egregious malfeasance on the part of the FBI and the intelligence community if you hadn't have gotten away with it before. Yes. You're not going to do it on, right? You're just not going to do it. I want to go back to something Simona said, which is very important. I want to go back to that testimony, Simona, that you gave. I haven't forgotten that, because you, and I want you to be able to clarify too, George, whether or not when you met Mifsud, did you know Simona had known him in the past or not at all? Or when did that all come together in your mind? When did you guys figure that out? But Simona, when you told the committee this, and I'm not asking you to give anything away, what was the reaction from Adam Schiff?
Oh my God, it was okay, but it was actually looking at me. I remember Adam Schiff in particular, Eric Swallow, they were very upset. They were looking at me like, doesn't mean anything. What makes you believe that it was not a double agent? That's what they asked me. And I said, I'm open to, based on evidence or counter arguments, based on his real connection, to evaluate this scenario. But I'm just telling you his connection, name and surname, not only to the Western intelligence, but to the Link campus in Rome, where I was actually offered a job at the time after I been working 7 years for the European Parliament. And this is known in Italy for being a spy school. Now, I'm not saying that everybody there is an agent, but definitely trains agents and even FBI there. It's the only international university in Italy with this specific purpose. So Mifsud got an important role there, and also told to the Adam Schiff that Mifsud didn't strike to me as an ordinary professor, as he used to introduce himself in any context. Which kind of professor has this type of access to political world, from the highest room at European Parliament to the parliament rooms in Italy? Mifsud was extremely connected in Italy. Why a Maltese professor would campaign for an Italian politician, which is at the same time the head of the socialist group? I mean, I know these people very well personally. So they were really petrified. They were trying to push a narrative, and I didn't let them do it.
So that's very important, because this is a big reason why Adam Schiff has fought so hard on releasing transcripts. He doesn't want people to see the full narrative. And it's very important that the American people understand this. And that takes me to you, George, because over and over again, you had told every media outlet that has possibly interviewed you, from the New York Times to me, John Solomon, Daily Caller, everyone, that never once did you ever agree at all with anyone, Mifsud or anyone, that that you would want access to the so-called Hillary Clinton missing emails, that you would at all do anything with Russia. Now, people tried to come after you and say, oh, he's not telling the truth. Look, he was convicted. He lied to the FBI. We'll get into that, because I want you to clarify everything that happened with the FBI on that conviction. But you always stated this emphatically. There was nothing. In fact, if anyone ever asked me the question, I would say that's treason. There's no way I would do it. Now, I've got this story put right here in my hands. On the transcripts that have been released, basically those transcripts that you didn't know you were being monitored with informants showing for a fact that everything George said is true, down to the minutiae. He never, ever, ever agreed with the informant sent by the FBI to do anything that would violate any law in the United States, let alone treason. So I want you to explain that and how that happened.
Well, absolutely. And thank you for that, Sarah, because, you know, George Papadopoulos loves this country, and I would die for this country. And in fact, my entire career was designed simply to give back any way I possibly can to public service, whether I was in Washington at a think tank in some ways, and then eventually joining presidential campaigns in order to give back if some of them would have ended up winning. So I love this country. This country's given me everything, has given my family everything. My grandparents came here as immigrants from Greece with nothing and became incredibly successful. And really, I saw the American dream my entire life. So the notion that a person like myself would ever betray my country to a rival, hostile power like Russia, that's absurd. So I just want to make that very clear. And also, my entire life's work was actually designed to also undermine Russia's influence around the world. I worked at a neoconservative think tank. We're not promoting Russian ideology there, and we're not promoting Russian interests there. So I just want to put that all out there. And about these informants and Joseph Mifsud. So the first thing about Mifsud is, and I want to tie it into General Flynn for a second, and Sidney Powell, his lawyer. Over the last couple of months, there was an interesting story by Sidney Powell that she actually has found out that Joseph Mifsud's phones are now in the hands of the DOJ. What is on those phones? I think it's going to be explosive. That's the first thing. The second thing is we also found out that Joseph Mifsud was targeting Michael Flynn at that RT dinner in Moscow in 2015 as well. Why was Joseph Mifsud targeting General Michael Flynn and me? And why was Stefan Halper targeting General Flynn and me? General Flynn and I, we exchanged some emails during the transition period. I was abroad. We never met face to face. And we were, you know, I was sending him whatever information I had. Other than that, there's absolutely no reason why our fates would have been so intertwined with these two operatives. So that's something that still has to be understood. And about your point on the informants and me never betraying my country, let me just put it out there. Joseph Mifsud never offered me anything. Joseph Mifsud's role was to drop a bomb on me to make me a walking walking explosive device within the campaign. I was supposed to be a Trojan horse within the campaign who had this information from a so-called Russian operative that, hey, look, the Russians have Hillary Clinton's emails. And the entire purpose of what this person was supposed to do was to hope and pray, or somebody handling would hope and pray, that I would then transmit this information to the campaign, and then there would be a conspiracy case built within the campaign itself. That's exactly what the FBI wanted to know. They were never interested in Joseph Mifsud. That's exactly why I started to get very suspicious, and the special counsel was even less interested in Joseph Mifsud. And all they wanted to know is, who did I tell on the campaign what Joseph Mifsud said? The moment I would not lie and tell them a fake story to try and incriminate the president, they were asking me, did you tell Donald Trump? Did you tell Steve Bannon? Did you tell General Flynn? I said, no, no, no. They said, we don't believe you. And that's why they recommended jail for me, even though I never said it. And I wasn't going to lie to simply overthrow and help their case against the president. Because think of it. When my name was released in October, I think of October 17, they had basically bashed my head in for 20 hours of interrogation, trying to force me under a sealed situation where I couldn't raise money. I was panicking. The media didn't even know what had happened to me. I was arrested at an airport, and they were telling me, tell us this information and we'll get you out of here. It's no problem. My lawyers were pressuring me. Tell them the information. Don't hold back. It'll get you out of this situation. And with legal bills accruing, my girlfriend at the time, Simona, panicking, and me potentially losing her in a horrible situation as a 29-year-old guy who just wanted to build my life, I still would not break or tell them a lie that would have potentially sabotaged the entire Trump administration as early back as October 2017. Because what the storyline would have been is, Paul Manafort indicted, Rick Gates indicted, and Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos pleads guilty and also was circulating information that was illegal to the campaign. That's what would have happened. The country would have been in a state of paranoia. The president wouldn't have known how to defend himself. The administration would have been caught completely off guard. I had a gag order. I couldn't defend myself. And in my opinion, thank God that an angel like Simona came into my life at that point, because she's the only one who actually knew me, knew Joseph Mifsud from before, as she explained, and went on TV and started to tell the truth. And that's why, and that's when the special counsel really became crazy and really wanted me to go away for a very long time for a complete setup.
Let's talk about that, because this is really important. I remember, Simona, you during that time, you were on every show that you could get on the radio, on television, defending George, coming out, telling the truth about Mifsud, telling the truth about what happened at the airport, telling the truth, 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 truth. But at the same time, George, the FBI had informants, and we know this now based on these transcripts. I'm going to make a clarification now and a correction. I had immediately when we first heard about this, I was thinking Stefan Halper, because Stefan Halper was collecting information on Carter Page as well as George, but these were different informants. And I had said on Fox that it was Stefan Halper. It was not Stefan Halper. These were other informants that met you in Chicago. By the transcripts, they appear to be very young, and you were eating with them. Now, you don't know for certain, right, who these informants are, but you have your suspicions. Can you talk about that here?
Yes. I'm not 100% sure about who the informants are, and I would never want to. I'm 99% sure, let's say that. But until I'm 100% sure, I don't want to publicly name names. I know some reporters are doing their due diligence and reaching out to particular people that I am suspicious of. And there might be actually a breaking story today or tomorrow about who they might be, and their identities might be actually confirmed. If my suspicions are correct, these were two people that I went to university with. I hadn't seen them in probably 8 or 9 years after I left Chicago, where I was living in Washington and London after I left Chicago. And just in between some leisure time visiting family, they decide to, because I'm originally from Chicago, they decide to reach out to me. And from the transcripts, you could see they wanted to entrap me or get me or prod me into saying just some stupid fake information in the context of, you know, just guys talking among guys as two, as three single 28-year-old guys at the time. And I never did it. Because, of course, there was no evidence or there was no conspiracy, and I was up to absolutely nothing wrong. But they were trying to force me to say something that never existed. And that seems to be a pattern going back as early as 2016, all the way towards the fall of 2016 and early 2017, when these informants were all trying to extract some information that, in my opinion, it was imaginary. It was a fantasy. And
well, this is why, George, I want people to really understand this. Can you imagine living your life that the people that are employing you are spying on you? People that you're running into that say they want to meet you to have a conversation, people from Australia, people from that show up, honeypots, you know, everybody that's coming into your life that you didn't know before is actually there to spy on you, is actually there to get you to say something, to entrap yourself. Think about what happened to General Mike Flynn at the White House on January 24th, 2017. You know what makes him so innocent right off the bat is that he was like, yeah, send him over. Let's talk. Like, he didn't even think, like, even remotely in his mind that anybody would come over to talk to him about Russia, because General Mike Flynn has been a patriot with the military, you know, given his life to the military over 33 years, never once thought, well, yeah, there's something. Because if you really believed, okay, remember, everybody out there, if the FBI wants to talk to you, lesson learned, it doesn't matter if you're innocent or not, get an attorney and don't talk to them. Get an attorney, right? Even if you're innocent, just get an attorney, because everybody here, either they didn't know they were being talked to by an informant and their phone conversations were being recorded, like George, or they were said, like Mike Flynn, you know. And I want to play you a clip because it's important, because everything that you just said about 3 or 4 minutes ago with regard to having to, if you would have given them the story they wanted, they probably would have let you go, was the exact same thing that Roger Stone told me in an interview. And I want to play that clip. Adam, can we play that?
The Mueller prosecutors offered my lawyers a deal. If Stone will fess up, if he will recharacterize more than 30 phone conversations between myself and candidate Trump, which they had phone records of but no tapes of, if I would correctly remember the way they wanted me to, they would recommend no jail time for me.
There you go. That sounds just like what they were trying to do to you.
That's exactly what they were doing. And there was a moment there. First of all, after I pled guilty, the FBI wasn't done with me. They really had it out for me. I don't know why they had such a target or an animus towards me. But after I pled guilty, they continued to have informants go after me. And they were trying to
ask me to become an informant.
And they subpoenaed Simona, an Italian citizen, and my girlfriend at the time, into trying to coerce her to testify against me in front of a grand jury or wear a wire against me. Now, think about that. The FBI built their entire case around me to the extent where if they couldn't destroy me with a fake plea agreement that I might have eventually withdrawn, and I thought I had the opportunity to withdraw, but I decided against it because I thought if I went to trial and prolonged the situation, I could never get the story out. So the best thing I ever did was just got them off my back, and Simone and I were able just to get the truth out there and really expose so much that it also seems that a lot of what the Durham probe is about is my story, according to NBC. So that's quite fascinating as well. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I was in legal jeopardy or fighting. And that's exactly why I think the FBI went after me so hard and even attempted to jeopardize Simona against me and weaponize her against me, because they never wanted this truth coming out. And there was one moment where the light bulb switched in my head, where I knew I was set up by the FBI. And that moment was after Simona went on, I think, George Stephanopoulos. I think this was December 2017. And the special counsel invited me to Washington. I flew to Washington with my lawyers from Chicago, where I was forced to reside at the time, with no job. I couldn't travel, couldn't do anything in a city that was not familiar to me at that point. And they told me, if Simona or anybody goes on television again, we're going to withdraw your guilty plea. So at first second, I was scared. But then there was a picture circulating among the global media at that point for a couple months. You might recall it. It was with Joseph Mifsud and Boris Johnson. I don't know if you remember that, but it was a front page picture with Boris Johnson, who's now the Prime Minister of the UK. He was then the Foreign Secretary. And Joseph Mifsud. And I sat with the FBI agents after the prosecutors told me that. And I said to myself, well, you know, all right, I might have messed up, but at least I gave up a Russian spy to the FBI, and I'm helping my country. This is how naive I was at that point. And I told the FBI and Mueller's team, he's in London. Why don't you have MI5 arrest this guy? And you know what they did? They told me, they squinted their eyes, smirked, and said, this is what happens when you don't cooperate with us. And by cooperating, they wanted me to wear a wire against the guy who was entrapping me to begin with. So the whole situation is beyond belief. It's like a bad spy movie that I had the unfortunate reason or, you know, situation to fall into. Simona fell into it, and by fate or by whatever it was, she just happened to know the guy that set me up. And we fell in love during this crisis, and we're moving forward now and just hoping that those who committed this this treason against our country, because it's not about me, okay? This isn't about individuals. This isn't even about the president. This is about America. This was an attack on America.
That's what I've said from the beginning. This is an attack on America. This is an attack on Americans who voted for a president, a duly elected president of the United States. And they utilized all of the players and everything they possibly could surrounding this president to target the president and the administration. And every one of you, from George, from you to Simona, to Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, anybody that they could try, Carter Page as well, especially because I think of you and Carter Page kind of synonymously because you were both advisors. They targeted in an attempt. They didn't care if they destroyed your life. They didn't care what they had to do. What do you want to happen now? Because there's going to be a couple of things that are going to happen here. We're seeing all these developments in Lieutenant General Michael Flynn's case. What are you hoping for you? I mean, do you hope a pardon from President Trump now that all of these facts, folks, not made up stories from some David Ignatius novella about the CIA, but the actual facts of the truth of the matter? Do you hope for a pardon? And where are you both? What are you both planning for the future? Because now, I mean, as you've written a book, which is phenomenal, by the way, and done that, and you're now moving towards a new future, and I'm trying to figure out, like, with everything that's happened, what are you hoping for?
I would never ask the president for a pardon. My case is done. I already had the unfortunate situation to serve 11 days in a prison because of this scam. And you know, my wife and I, now my wife, we were just dating at the beginning of it, but now we've been married for 2 years. And it would be a privilege and an honor to receive a pardon from President Trump, and I would humbly accept a pardon from the president, because I think the facts are so overwhelming now that everyone associated to him and his campaign and even his administration, who had the misfortune of running into the Comey FBI, had their life upended and in many ways destroyed. Both Simone and I are very resilient. We don't give up, and we've moved on. And it's been very tough to move on with a situation like this, where there was so much mischaracterization of both of us and just this hostility. But America is the greatest country on earth. Americans from every state in this country and even abroad have just showered both of us with such encouragement, prayers, and positivity that has really made such an impact on both of us. So that's something that I would never change for anything. And we're now living in Los Angeles. We've been here for about a year and a half. It's an interesting city. Simona, you want to talk about what you're up to over here?
How's that like? It's very liberal there.
That's something like that. First of all, I would like to talk about the pardon. I know he doesn't have an expectation to this extent. I do. Actually, I was asking President Trump for a pardon back on time when I knew the story on all channels, even on Tucker Carlson. I think that's by matter of fairness, it would make completely sense to exonerate George completely. He doesn't deserve it. Our life in LA began in a very special way. We've been filming a docu-series for a year and a half. This docu-series is a cross between a political tell-all and a real life spy trick, a spy story. We had the camera rolling when George was heading to federal prison in Wisconsin, and camera were rolling even when I went the second time to Washington, D.C. to testify to the Senate. You met me when I was testifying to the Congress, right. So twice. This our story. It's more than entertainment. It's our way to tell the truth and how this pressure of the government affected the life of a relatively young married couple trying to begin and settle the foundation of their life. There are moments of extreme pressure that I think it's important to share with the viewers to understand what this situation was behind these highly fake headlines that portrayed me, as you said, when you met me, you saw a completely different person than the one that you saw Googling my name online. They've been pursuing this character assassination with such a passion and leaving fake news on the net. And these are haunting our life, even when you want to start a career. I came to Los Angeles in first place for a small role in a big movie, and I was very happy. But then Hollywood started to look at me with a different eyes. So it's what I like about Hollywood. It's the storytelling, and I think everybody should be able to tell a story without a political color. So I hope that when the show will air, the viewers will be capable to see what happened and how we are both working on our respective career and trying to make lemons out of a lemon.
Let me tell you, this is exciting. This is a docu-series that you have now taken upon yourselves to tell your own story, your own truth about how your lives have been affected, which is very personal and I think very important, because we don't get to the truth through a middleman, usually. It's better to hear the truth from the person that actually lived it, and we'll see it for ourselves. Do we know where this is going to air? We're very excited about this. When will you be finished with it? Is there any hint, or is this just our hint for right now?
I know they're a different channel negotiating to buy the docuseries with our production company, including Fox Nation. So I think this would be the perfect place to air this type of content because we'll be uncensored.
I think that's fantastic. I can't wait to see it. And for all of you out there, Fox Nation is just such a great platform to see docuseries, to understand what's going on around the world, and to expand. If you're a fan of Fox, I'm a Fox contributor. I love the company. It's a family. Go to Fox Nation, become a part of Fox Nation because it's very important. And I really hope that they do take this docuseries on because I will be one of the first people to watch it. I hope I get an invitation to the premiere. That's what I want.
Actually, I would like you to be part of an episode.
I will do it.
It was such a beautiful moment when you took me out for lunch in Washington and I started to cry. I saw the real first nice human person talking to me like as a human.
I've seen this happen before, Simona, unfortunately, where people, I've never seen it to this extent. This Russia hoax business, this setup, the weaponization of our intelligence community and our law enforcement apparatus is really something I never believed would actually happen in our country. I've seen it in other countries, seen it quite often when I traveled overseas, but I never believed that that would happen here. So I thank you for your time. Is there anything that you've always wanted to say, George, something that maybe dealing with Joseph Misfit or anything else before I let you go? So you guys can enjoy the beautiful sunshine. It's raining here. So I'm not going outside today. We're on lockdown. But is there anything that you've always wanted to say to get across that you haven't yet, or something that maybe we should be mindful of when it comes to your story?
Yes. And thanks for that, Sarah. We're at the precipice right now in American history, and what happens moving forward with the John Durham investigation can change world history in many ways. What happened to me, and I assume other people on the campaign, probably even General Flynn, if there was one other person that what happened to me happened was General Flynn, based on his background at the DIA, et cetera. And the weaponization of the CIA and foreign allies in targeting us. I understand that this is a very sensitive review that Durham is doing. I know that Attorney General Barr has discussed the UK, Australia, Italy, and I know even the president himself, going back as far as last summer, called out Italy, Ukraine, Australia, and the UK for review by Attorney General Barr. What happened here was the weaponization of the CIA and the U.S. intelligence community in coordination with U.S. allies abroad to commit this treasonous act upon our country and the campaign. I don't care if these are allies. I don't care if you're going to hurt feelings. The president, Durham, and Attorney General Barr have to hold those countries accountable. The Australians were essentially lying and mocking the president during a call a couple of years ago that was leaked, where they were saying, oh, this conversation was so innocent with Alexander Downer and George Papadopoulos. It wasn't innocent. Okay, that's why he's been interviewed by Durham 4 or 5 months ago. I've always said it was a setup. These countries were setting the campaign up because they had vested interests in a Clinton presidency. I know what they were talking to me about. I was meeting with the highest levels of the British government and the Australian government at that time, and they were horrified that candidate Trump was pro-Brexit and was against the TPP, which both Australia and the UK had interest in, besides a million different other reasons that they didn't want an America First president. We cannot be afraid to hold these countries accountable. In fact, I just want to make it clear that when Attorney General Barr and John Durham traveled to Italy, not Russia, Italy, to learn about Joseph Mifsud, that is when the investigation metastasized into a criminal matter after they learned information from the Italian government about Joseph Mifsud, not the Russians. So if the president or the administration or anybody who is responsible for this new investigation is listening to my words, you need to expose what those foreign allies did, because if we throw this under the rug, it can be repeated again, and you never know what might happen to a future president. So that's really what has been on my mind and my heart because it's the truth. And it's a very sensitive matter, and it might really upend traditional allies and security arrangements and even intelligence cooperation to an extent we've never seen before. So,
I couldn't have said that better myself. I absolutely agree with you. And it's like light bulb moments while you're talking, because it's ideas that I have thought of. And of course, looking at your case and what happened to Lieutenant General Mike Flynn and what's happened globally, yeah, is something that we should all be concerned with. We should all be afraid of what happened to you and to everyone else in this. But more importantly, we should, just like George said, we should all be concerned about what this means to us as a nation and what could happen in the future. Absolutely. George, you're amazing. Thank you so much. Simona, you're incredible. You guys make an amazing couple together. I can't wait to see your docuseries. And George, I certainly hope and I know that you have a great future in this country doing so much more. And Simona, you too. Everything that you've done to shed light on the truth. Guys, this is the only way we are going to be able to move forward, is that we shed light on this. It's a best disinfectant, and we expose it, and then we can move on. We can never move on unless the truth comes out. And the truth was right here at the Sarah Carter Show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Was that interview not explosive? I mean, I learned so much from George Papadopoulos and Simona, and I've known them and I've spoken to them about the case. But what they've expressed now, looking back and seeing how all these little pieces fit together, this puzzle, this amazing puzzle of corruption, malfeasance within our FBI, the weaponization of our intelligence community. I'm going to tell you, the most important thing George said was towards the end of the interview. We can't sweep what our allies did overseas under the rug. If they were involved, which they were, in assisting, in spying on an incoming president of the United States, then we need to know, and they need to be held accountable. Next week, I have Nigel West on the show. If you don't know who he is, you should, because he understands the spy world better than anyone. Nigel West is not only an incredible author, go out there, look him up on the internet, but he is an expert in MI6, in U.S. spy intelligence agencies, European intelligence agencies. He's also, and I'm going to look over here because I don't want to get this wrong, he's the editor, European editor for the World Intelligence Review. And more importantly, Nigel West wrote a report on Christopher Steele, whom he personally knows. And remember, that's the former British spy who was hired by the research firm Fusion GPS to write the crazy, salacious, debunked dossier on President Donald Trump. And let me tell you, you are not going to want to miss this interview with Nigel West, because he knew Christopher Steele very well. And what he has to say about Christopher Steele's report will stun you, will stun you. And I look forward to talking to him about those details next week. Thank you so much, America, for joining me today. You all are the best part of this show. Please write in. Please let us know how you feel. Let me know what stories you want to hear here at the Sarah Carter Show, and what we could be working on SarahCarter.com, Jenny Tare, Logan Raddick, Adam Carluccio, who works with me here at the podcast. Thank you all for everything you do. I know we're all still on lockdown, but I'm thinking about you, and I'm right here with you, hardly leaving my house. Follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carter DC, and go to our website, SarahCarter.com. Remember, America, we are taking the story back. Thank you, and God bless.